You're listening to Street Roots Radio. I'm Hannah Francis. This project is a collaboration between X-Ray FM, KBOO Radio, and local publication Street Roots. Street Roots is a nonprofit organization in Portland, Oregon that creates income opportunities for people experiencing homelessness and poverty by producing a newspaper and other media that are catalysts for individual and social change. Today, we have an interview with Street Roots investigative reporter Henry Brannon about his recent article, City to Besiege Tarp Palace. Residents who have lived for a decade or more in structures they built next to Hazelnut Grove Village must vacate their homes by July 31st per city directive. Thanks for being here, Henry.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Absolutely. So as folks can probably tell from the title of this article, the story is about a specific site that is slated to be swept at the end of the month. Can you tell me a little bit about this home specifically, the Tarp Palace, and why this is a special place?
Yeah, so basically the land is kind of near where North Greeley meets North Interstate Avenue. It's just off that bike path that runs along Greeley next to the Hazelnut Grove village. And so basically for the last 15 years, there's been a camp there, even actually predating Hazelnut Grove. This one gentleman, Dean, has lived there, like, you know, as I said, 15 years, and he has a tiny home there. It's well built, wooden, has a little porch. Him and his cats live there. I've talked to him a few times over the last, 6 months, and a super nice guy. And then, for about 10 years, this other person, Sammy, has lived there, and Sammy has built, it's pretty difficult to describe. He worked as a carpenter and a tradesperson before coming to the US, but he's built this what I would describe as pretty, like, beautiful oasis, kind of tucked back against the bluff. And it's kind of like part open air garden, part home. And it's basically a series of structures connected by these carpeted pathways with gardens. And you can't see it at all. It's completely kind of concealed. But Sammy's built this very beautiful home there, and has a good relationship with neighbors and all of these other things, Dean as well. But the city kind of recently finally decided to tell the land trust that they need to clear out. And there's kind of a whole timeline of that that's created some pretty substantial problems for Dean and Sammy, and for kind of a lesser extent to the land trust as well.
Yeah, thanks for that. And they have explicit permission from the land trust to be there, right?
Yeah, so the land is actually owned by the Oregon Sustainable Agriculture Land Trust, and they've given them the go-ahead to be there for this time. So they've been there in their homes with permission, but city code maybe doesn't agree with that. It doesn't necessarily agree with the classification of these things as homes. They view them, according to the letter Street Roots obtained from the land trust, as kind of basically like camps, unauthorized camps, is how the city would characterize these.
Gotcha. So will you tell me about the timeline a little bit?
It all kind of starts at a period that we don't actually know yet. So at some point, somebody reported the campsite. What the city told me was, quote, "The inspection followed a referral from the city's impact reduction team, which identified unauthorized camping on the privately owned site." And so the city's impact reduction team basically operates from, people reporting campsites. I talked to a neighbor, who's actually a state official who owns the land directly overlooking that. And he had said that because of trash, about a year or so ago, he had asked the city to help them. But, apparently some other folks seem to have reported it more recently. And so because of that, the city's impact reduction team said, or sent a city inspector out there. And so in late June, a city inspector ends up on the site. And while Dean and Sammy have been there, years and years and years, a third camp recently popped up in the last few months. And that camp had, a considerable amount of kind of what they would t characterize as trash visible from the bike path. Dean's camp had a little bit as well, or had some as well. And so the city sees this and then looks at the two homes. And the city sends a letter then to the land trust on July 1st and basically says, you're in violation of city code. And so this is the Department of Permitting and Development. They basically send this letter on July 1 saying, you have 30 days for all the people to leave, and you have 60 days for all the, they characterize as trash, but of course, this is people's homes that they've built over many, many years, to clear all that out. To kind of skip ahead a little bit, Schrutz heard about this from the land trust and went down there on July 8th. And we talked to folks living there, and they were basically like, no, we just need to get the trash out. We need to clean up. Then Schrutz the next day obtained the letter that the land trust had been sent. They sent it to us. And the letter actually makes it clear, no, people do need to leave. Otherwise, the land trust is in violation of city code, the city alleges. And so we went back, and it was frankly pretty devastating. Dean at the camp was basically like, Schrutz had to inform him that this place he lived 15 years, he was had to leave in a matter of, weeks. This was the 9th, and he had to be out by the end of July. So a pretty brutal turnaround there. Certainly, against tenant laws if he was considered a tenant, which I suppose the city doesn't. So he had, and I should say, in a particularly kind of devastating turn, he had actually cleaned up a substantial amount of that trash from a little bit from his camp as well from that other camp. So that was it was. Pretty sickening, frankly. And then Sammy had, I didn't manage to talk to Sammy on the 9th. He wasn't there. But basically, they said this is the first they are hearing about it. And the land trust said, no, we gave them the letter. The letter is pretty difficult to understand. I reached out to the city about it because it talks about fines, what appears to be an $1,025 fine per violation. And it's two lots, so potentially two different violations. And then, of course, it could even mean for two different like legal violations or code violations each month. I asked the city, how much are you standing to fine this land trust a month? And their spokesperson declined to answer, basically saying, we don't know until we cross that bridge. So there's kind of unspecified fees, and then there's also like an occupancy fine. So it's unclear. It could be, thousands upon thousands of dollars, or it could be a couple hundred. And I suppose nobody really knows, which, that gives the city quite a bit of leverage too, in terms of removing people, because the land trust is a pretty small organization and doesn't want people there. So basically, where things stand now is kind of the folks are cleaning up the trash. I again biked by it today, and I saw, trash ready to be removed, bagged up and in a cart. But folks, as far as I know, are still being told they have to leave their homes.
So, what kind of options do these folks have going forward?
Yeah, so I mean, there's kind of different tracks. The land trust, I talked to their treasurer, and he basically said, yeah, I mean, people need to leave. He was pretty, matter of fact about it. I think they don't want to incur these potentially thousands of dollars in fines each month. Residents at Hazelnut Grove told me they encouraged, a more assertive approach to staying on that land. They said, we camped out in front of City Hall to get this. We fought for this and it worked, and they encouraged kind of taking a more assertive or militant approach to kind of asserting their rights to stay there. And then kind of the land trust also has kind of a back channel effort going to preserve that. And they basically, the treasurer, Jeff Stang, told me like we would rather these folks live there. You know, they're liked by neighbors. I like them. We don't want to displace people. The housing crisis is bad enough. So we'd like to give the land to the city to then expand the Hazelnut Grove village. And I think that's a lot of people's ideal scenario. The Hazelnut Grove villagers told me they would prefer to just have the land trusted to the actual village as opposed to the city. But whatever the case, you know, it seems that there's kind of an effort to expand the village. And it certainly seems like there's an appetite for that. I reached out to the Portland Bureau of Transportation, who the land trust had said, hey, we'd like to give the land to y'all. And operative word here being give, you know, this wouldn't be a transaction. It would be a transfer because of the land trust bylaws, I was told. And the Portland Bureau of Transportation said, you know, we're just hearing about this. It's too soon to say. So that's where things stand right now, where basically Dean and Sammy are caught in the middle of all this, and their lives and their housing, you know, stand to be pretty shredded by the report. I should say the city also said that this is private land, and so there wouldn't be a sweep by rapid response or something of that nature. But the landowner talked about paying a contractor to put a fence around the land. So it's unclear where things stand now or how this will impact Dean and Sammy or folks in that kind of third camp that there seems to be kind of less an appetite for them to stay. Yeah, so that's kind of the situation right now.
Yeah, thanks for laying that out. It's a really bizarre concept to think about. You know, like if someone was indoors, you know, had a permit for that space, they would never be told to move within a month because there was trash on their land. You know, it's just like so strange to think about how we think about someone living outside, even if it's for 15 years, as not actually having a right to that space.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, the city, I will say, the code violations and kind of the kind of person by person basis at which they're kind of levied at people has been a tool that the city has used, you know, even to displace people. You know, when you're in violation of code, I mean, obviously it depends on you being reported or the city having, you know, it out for you. Or deciding to enforce that would be how they would describe that. But you know, that's levied against, you know, fines are levied against your property as a lien. I guess the last little thing I ought to share is that, you know, this does come in the context of dramatically increasing sweeps all around the city. You know, biking just in that area to work, you know, you see sweeps a lot of days. You see the rapid response trucks. And also, I mean, in the last 4 years, city data shows that sweeps have increased about 664%. It would be dramatically more if you measured in 5 years because of pandemic lows, but it's kind of more fair to the pre-pandemic precedent to measure the last 4 years. And that's still really a dramatic increase in the number of sweeps, which advocates will and people who've experienced them will tell you is really their lives being destroyed. You know, it's arguably even more destructive than an eviction for people's lives. You know, I've talked to people who lost spouses because of medications being taken, and their spouse just died. So that's, yeah.
Yeah, it's super, that's super rough and super destructive. Seeing the increase over the last 4 years is really wild. For listeners who don't know what that term is, could you just define it really quick?
Yeah, sweep is kind of the conversational way to describe what the city describes as a campsite removal, and what could like any kind of normal person would describe as like if you see a homeless person basically making a homestead or a camp or a home, whatever you want to call it, basically their home. The city is coming in with kind of contractors and saying like you don't have permission to be here. We're gonna throw all your stuff away. And you know, obviously now it has been recriminalized, and so you may also be cited. The city would argue, you know, we're also connecting people to services. the efficacy of that or how much that's happening is kind of a point of debate, where a lot of people I've talked to have said, like, I don't, that's not my experience of being swept. But the city data shows they are, or says they are connecting a lot of people. But yeah, basically just evicting somebody from their site and throwing all their things away. Sometimes even if they are at the site and are like, oh, please don't throw this away. I've witnessed that firsthand.
Yeah, thanks for defining that. Another bizarre part of sweeps is that, like, so often I have seen like people doing the sweeps, throwing away camping gear that was distributed by the county or the city. And so it's so weird to see this like cycle of taxpayer dollars, like paying for tents that are put out there and then paying for people to pick them up and throw them in the trash when they're being used.
I mean, in some way, I mean, a couple things. You do see less of that now. The counties, you talk to mutual aid groups and support for a lot of that work, whether it's through tents or other kind of harm reduction supplies, has decreased. And part of that is just budgets are decreasing. But then you also do see in what you describe, that very real pattern, the like debates or conflicts between the city's approach to dealing with homelessness, which kind of they would describe as a more shelter-oriented approach, and critics and a lot of homeless folks I've talked to would describe as basically like hiding the problem by forcing people into shelters. And then the county's approach, which they've done modeling at a pretty deep level, that finds that shelters aren't the most efficient way to spend money. And so they're kind of pivoting away from a shelter-centric approach to kind of eviction prevention on the kind of early end, and then kind of more permanent options with supportive services on the longer end. And so you can see that kind of conflict in the ways these different governments are trying to fight this. I would encourage anybody interested in this topic more to look at a fantastic article from Alex Zelensky a while back about this kind of fight between the city and county. Based on some pretty deep reporting and some records she obtained.
Thanks. Is there anything else that you would like to add about this article?
Anytime you're doing a story about a removal, like, I think there's a tendency to view it as kind of like the inevitable happening. And, I think the inevitability dulls the kind of the scale of the personal tragedy for the people involved. And I think the scale of it also does. When you think about city data, a 664% increase, going from like, 1,000 something sweeps to I think 8,000 something sweeps a year. It's easy to get lost that each one of those is somebody's life just turned really upside down. And that's not to say some folks don't have outcomes that are positive. Some folks certainly do get connected to services, but I mean, I've been reporting on this stuff for years and years and years in Portland and around the country, and I have yet to kind of talk to somebody out of dozens and dozens of people who wouldn't describe their experience being swept as one of the worst experiences of their life. And as Streetroots, kind of chronicled in a very in-depth way years and years back, or I suppose years back. Sweeps do kill, they, both from isolating people, that kind of takes away support that would help them deal with other challenges or maybe have kind of a harm reduction approach to substance use, or getting them health care. And then also in ways like people losing medications, is just a very direct way. So behind each one of these numbers is like, one of the worst days of somebody's life, and it leaves people in very, very vulnerable positions. In terms of, when you have a camp, you're not visible from the public, but when you don't have that, you are. And visibility equals often violence for a lot of folks. So I think that's an important part to remember, even though this is less a sweep, because it's private land, this does play it or kind of fit into that larger, picture.
Right. How can folks get a copy of this article?
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, obviously, Street Roots is online, but the best way to read Street Roots is, of course, the print copy, which you can find a vendor all around the city. One of the best ways would be to go to streetroots.org/vendors and then scroll down a little, and you'll see a lovely map of where people are and when. Yeah, it's there's something about print media that's lovely, and of course, supporting a vendor is even better. You know, this provides people income to live and makes a big difference in people's lives. So yeah, buy a print copy, and you know, maybe if you can't find it, check us out online, social media, etc.
Thanks, Henry.
Cool. Well, thanks for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. On X-Ray FM, you're listening to Street Roots Radio. I'm Hannah Francis.